Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Yeah, a little Irish music. You know why I'm playing Irish music? Of course you don't. We're celebrating Euro-American culture this week. Irish culture today, maybe German culture tomorrow, perhaps another Euro-ethnic group another day. That's because there is no longer any representation of European Americanism anywhere. It's considered to be evil to have come from Europe. Of course, we built the nation. Those of us who have origins in Europe are proud of our history. We're not allowed to be proud, of course. So we're going to be proud, of course. Now, I want to talk about something I saw last night on PBS, which was pretty damn good. It was a show on the Irish Catskills up in the Catskill Mountains. I always knew about the Jewish Catskills. I know about the Italian Alps, the Poconos. I didn't know there was an Irish Catskills. But no doubt there were other ethnic enclaves that I didn't know about in the 50s and 60s. And it was astounding to me the cohesion of the Irish community and how similar it was to the Jewish community in the sense of ethnic cohesion, ethnic identity, how the children related to it, how every adult there looked like a relative. It was astounding. So I thought I would talk today about where have all America's ethnic communities gone and the birth of the Savage Nation. Because, yes, that is connected. I created this show 22 years ago because I was acculturated, living in California. Absolutely no relationship whatsoever to my background or my people. I thought I would go insane talking to the idiots in San Francisco because there was no conversation. It was no continuum. You'd say something to them, it would go like right through their face. There'd be no feedback. It was like talking to an empty wall would have been about the same thing. And I realized I would go nuts because I came from a community where people communicated, good, bad, and ugly. You knew what they were thinking, and they knew what you were thinking. It didn't matter what your ethnic group was, Jewish, Irish, Italian. It didn't matter, Russian. Everybody could communicate in New York. Black, white, people knew how to talk to each other. The West Coast, zero communication ability, no communication skills that I found. Now, maybe things have changed. I'm not here to knock all of the people. I don't know how it works today. It's more or less still pretty bland. You can't generalize for all people. But because of that alienation, I was forced to create a radio ethnicity. A radio culture, radio world. I did. I created the Savage Nation to create my own community, in other words. And so I've drawn into this community people from all ethnic backgrounds. In fact, many races feel that they're in this community, joined together not by an ethnic background or a country of origin, but by a sense of identity with the America that they love, that their parents loved, called borders, language, and culture, the United States that we all love. And I want to talk about where have all America's little Italy's gone, where whatever happened to German America, whatever happened to the disappearing American Jewish community, where is it? Even America's Chinatowns are disappearing, believe it or not, and why it happens and what had happened. Now, those are some of the topics I'm going to talk about on the show, as well as the news that I pulled. And where you hear the news stories that caught my eye from Saturday till this morning, I'll read them in a minute. But before the show at home, I was working a plunger at home before the show in the sink, not in the other thing. I don't want to get too graphic. I was going to call a plumber. I said, wait a minute, I have a good plunger in the garage. So I was working a plunger in the sink, and it worked. And I thought, you know, a simpler thing as this is working a plunger. I thought how glad and lucky I was that I didn't go to Choate and Harvard. You see, I was raised by an immigrant father who taught me the basics of plumbing, wiring, how to saw a piece of wood, how to drive a nail, and how to screw a screw. I don't have to finish that sentence for you because, unfortunately, the kids today could not do a piece of plumbing. They couldn't put a wire together without catching fire. They cut their finger off if you gave them a saw and a piece of wood and said, do it in 30 seconds or less. If you told them to drive a nail, they'd break their thumb. And if you taught them how to screw a screw, they would think you were talking about something on YouTube. But no, I was very lucky to have been raised in that environment up to a point. And I want to talk about what's missing in America today and how we might get it back. And here are some of the news stories that I'm going to talk about over the next few days. President Trump picked a nominee to be the next Army Secretary, and the man named Mark Green is a great man, a Republican state senator. The man has served two tours of duty. He's a flight surgeon, graduated West Point. He would have been perfect to be the Army Secretary. Take a guess who shot him down. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and trans, and Muslim lobbies influenced Trump to make him drop out. It's such an important story because we know that the military has a lot of money now, thanks to Trump. But has the culture changed? No. The military culture is identical to what it was when Obama destroyed it. There's been no change in the culture in the military in this country, just more money for hardware, which really is a payoff to contractors. That's one story that's so important. Feinstein, one of the richest white women in the history of the universe, has the gall to get up on Sunday's Meet the Press and said she's worried what 13 white men will do to health care. You know, you talk about sickening and nauseating, and you talk about pandering to people of color. It doesn't get any uglier than Feinstein. And then there's the strange case of Obama's criminal former staffer named Ben Rhodes. You can figure out why I call him criminal, because he broke the law, in my estimation. And yet this cretin, Ben Rhodes, had the nerve to say that the election of Macron in France means that the populist movement and the Brexit movements are dead, that the wave of nationalism is broken. You think so? Meanwhile, in San Francisco, the local newspaper, whatever's left of it, admits that some anti-Trump protesters are paid by their companies. You heard me. I'll tell you the companies. And then there's a book coming out about Obama as a young man by somebody who knew him. I don't know what the book is. But you see, I gave it a headline because he dated a half-Dutch, half-Japanese woman named Sheila Jaeger. And they had a lot of sex, according to the book, as young people will do. And they were having a wild time, and he really, really was into her. But he made a decision, a rational political decision, that he had to step away from this woman and marry a black woman because he would be rejected by the black community otherwise and wouldn't be able to rise politically. My headline, Obama exposed as jive artist who used race as a political strategy. See, many of you people on the left don't realize that you are useful idiots. It's the same with Macron in France. All the socialists are celebrating in the streets without knowing that Macron was a banker for Rothschild. It's unbelievable to me how dumb they are. And we overestimate the left. They're not that smart. They're kind of stupid and easily manipulated. Those are some of the topics. Here's another one that I know is going to attract tons of calls today and tomorrow. Have you dropped loser friends in your life? And why? And did your life improve? Now, I was triggered to ask this question by an article about a guy who's allegedly a rich guy who dropped a video out on YouTube called Drop One Losing Friend on how to become successful. And this guy said, this has been the one that I've been very hot on talking about in the world, but I've been scared of because even when you just said that, I'm like, ugh, the guy's terrible. And he's the CEO of a big company, apparently. And he said maybe if you got rid of one friend or spent a lot less time with one friend who's a real drag and a negative force and added a positive person in your office, if you switched it from 80 days hanging out with your negative friend and one day with your office acquaintance who's super positive to 4 days with your negative friend and 12 with the new person, he said you will definitely grow. Now, I happen to agree with it. I told you years ago that I got into radio after I dropped my loser friends in San Francisco. They were not bad people, don't get me wrong. They were kind of nice people. They were a lot of fun, but they were all losers. Not one of them went anywhere in life. It doesn't mean they're bad. I don't know. Most of them were liberal. I used to have tremendous fun with them, but they were a drag on me because they brought out the worst in me. And it was only after I decided to walk alone that I walked this far and got this high. And so that's the opening to the show, and I want to go back to the birth of the savage nation, the Irish Catskills, et cetera, things like that, and the loss of ethnic communities in America, which led to the birth of the savage nation. I can ask you, have you dropped loser friends? Did your life improve? I can ask you, do you think that the nationalism movements are dead around the world? Is the Brexit-Trump wave of nationalism really broken, as the left is celebrating, or something else explaining it? Now, there's another element to this that I'm almost embarrassed to admit, which is that if we had known, and I support Trump, have supported him, will support him, if we had known that he would be turning over so much of his policymaking to his family, he would have lost 80-20. I'll tell you right now, this has to stop. This has to stop. I realize this is not going to engender me with the Trump administration. I realize that they have more power than you may imagine. But I also realize this has to stop. Enough is enough is enough. Now, if you think that I didn't see this coming, you're mistaken. As you well know, my book, Trump's War, became number one on the New York Times list. Well, sales are so strong that my publisher came out here to convince me to please go to the second edition, not the second printing. We're in many printings. They want a second edition. So I'm revising the first chapter. But I also found a preface that I wrote on December 23rd, 2016, just when I began the book, aboard a jet, somewhere over Texas en route to Oakland. And I wrote the preface, which I'm not going to read to you. It's called America, America. It's only a page long. But there's a very telling sentence toward the end of this preface, and I'm going to read it to you. This book is about Trump's war, his promises and his challenges. A war against enemies within and without. A war against his own entrenched Republican Party. Against a twisted internationalist media. Against his own liberal background and inclinations. And I said to the publisher, I want to put this into the second edition. And please italicize that last sentence. Against Trump's own liberal background and inclinations. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Irish Americans listening. Okay, that's good to know. You know, I gave you 10 topics in the first 10 minutes, and do you know there are zero callers? What do you want me to do? Talk about Obamacare like every other moron in the media? Are you people that bad? Are your brains that shot? What's going on in this country? There's more brain matter in a hangnail than there is on radio these days. A hangnail has more brain matter than what I hear on radio. What are you talking about here? I gave you 10 topics. You're not interested in any of them? Well, I could just play sound bites if you'd like and then just read ads. I mean, I could do that for 3 hours. Maybe that'll appeal to you. I'm not talking about Obamacare. I'd rather take a handkerchief, wrap it around my left finger, and get a cleaver and cut it off like the Yakuza than talk about Obamacare. I'm not doing it. And if that's all you and radio are ready for, you've got the wrong show tuned in. Go listen to some moron who has nothing else on his brain except to talk about Obamacare and Trumpcare. I'm not doing it. I gave you 10 topics. You're not interested in any of them? I can't help you. I didn't come this far in the human evolution to talk about Obamacare. If you think I'm mad, you're right, I am mad. Because I think that the radio audience is getting dumber by the day. I think that the listenership is getting more tuned out than ever. And you know what it must be? It must be people are just bored to death of the news. So I try to do something other than the news. All right, you're not interested. I'll go to tell you what I'm going to do. I'll just play tape now for 2 straight hours. But before I do that, oh, now the lights come on because Buddy threatened to leave. Buddy threatened to leave the stage, so now you're calling. You know, let me tell you something. We have a dictator in South America that has destroyed the country in Venezuela. Do you know that there's been a massive cover-up that it's related to socialism? Do you know how bad it is? The cover-up, you know, you say, oh, there's no fake news. It's all fake news. That's how a Rothschild banker named Macaroni can win in France when the morons on the left, the unwashed drug addicts, the immigrants, think that he's going to do something for them. He's a central banker, you schmucks. The same with this Venezuela thing. I warned you what it was. Now, who supported this country's slide into socialism? Sean Penn. When is the last time Sean Penn was straight? Does anyone know? Can anyone tell me definitively? the last time he gave a speech or a talk or wrote an article that he actually could know what he's talking about? Oliver Stoner supported Hugo Chavez. Danny Glover praised Hugo Chavez at the time. There is more brain matter in my dog's hangnail than in Danny Glover's brain. Here's Danny Glover praising Hugo Chavez, and you thought he was an actor. Listen to this.
So proud to be with you as we commemorate and celebrate a true man of the people. His memory lives with us through the work that you do as citizens of this great nation, as you continue to realize his vision of a participatory democracy,
you can hardly say
one involving
word.
All citizens in context.
Right, you got the picture. You know, my dog has a wart on his right inner leg that I've been treating for 2 days with a little cortisone cream and a little Neosporin. I have a wonderful neighbor who's a veterinarian. He said, you're doing the right thing with the cortisone cream. The dog is ripping his leg. She said, that's a Neosporin. He said, they get these little growths. I would suspect that there is more intelligence in the wart than there is in Danny Glover's brain, by what I just heard. They don't even have a salami amongst them to eat. And this moron goes over there and celebrates them for their socialism. You hear? Now, let me ask you something. I want to talk about the ethnic groups. Are you of Irish background? Are you of Italian background? Are you of German background? Are you of Russian background? Are you of Jewish background? Did you have an ethnic background as a child that you miss? Many of you, of course, you know, were part of the wave moving out. You got air conditioning. You got color television. You got all the food you could possibly eat. You didn't need to go to the pub. You had distant relationships that you saw once or twice a year. But don't you remember what that was like to have a cohesive ethnic community? We don't have it anymore, except the immigrants do. The immigrants come here and they stick together just as your grandfather did. They're no different than them in that regard. And I want to talk about the loss of ethnic communities in America, which, by the way, led to the birth of the Savage Nation, because whether you know it or not, this is your community, but it's not an ethnic community.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Savage.
Now, if you walk down the street, you can't tell who's Irish. No more. You walk down the street, you can't tell who's Italian. And unless they're dressed in religious garb, you can't tell who's a Jew. So America's ethnic communities are disappearing. Do you know that German was once the most frequently spoken language in America? And do you know that at the time of the signing, it was debated as to whether German should become the official language of the United States rather than English, and it lost by a very small vote. I don't know if you know this. Now, German culture has largely disappeared from the American landscape. Back at the turn of the last century, Germans were the predominant ethnic group in the U.S., 8 million out of a population of 76 million. And then what happened? World War I happened, and an anti-German hysteria swept the country. But unlike the Muslims today, who tell you to go to hell if you're concerned about Muslim terror, the Germans instead dropped their culture completely. They stopped speaking German at home. They stopped teaching their children German. They stopped reading German newspapers, and they became wholehearted Americans. And there went German culture from the American landscape. The same with America's Little Italies. I mean, we all go to Italian areas, but even Columbus Day has been ripped to pieces by the vermin left. They took out Columbus Day. Little Italy's are shrinking across the U.S. New York, it's shrinking. Baltimore, it's shrinking. It's disappeared completely in cities like Los Angeles, which once had a thriving Little Italy. And, of course, there is still the mother of all Little Italies, as they call it, 50 square blocks, and that's Lower Manhattan. Well, it was once 50 square blocks. It's now 3 square blocks of restaurants and cafes near Mulberry Street. So things are changing. Little by little, Italian stores and shops started to close. And today, Little Italy is sort of it's like going to Disneyland. You know, it's sort of like, let's go to the Disneyland called Little Italy. Let's go to the Disneyland called this and that. So I'm not lamenting the loss of it so much as I'm discussing it. And, you know, the more I think about this, the more I realize that ethnic communities are thriving in one place in America. Do you know where that is? Where are cohesive ethnic communities thriving the most? Oh, you haven't read this anywhere. You haven't heard it anywhere, except here on the Savage Nation, which is known for its original thought, if I must say so myself, since no one else will. Ethnic communities are thriving in prisons. You see, they have to thrive in prisons. It started with the black groups joining together with black prison gangs. You ask anyone in the prison world if I'm mistaken. If I'm mistaken, I'll correct that. To my understanding, this started with the Black Power movement in the 60s and 70s, and black prisoners forming black power blocks in prisons to basically take over the prison population. The first group to fight them were the Aryan Nation, the white power groups. I know you don't want to hear it, but that's the way it is. Ask people if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll correct myself. This is my knowledge of it, and I'm no expert. So then you had the white Aryan gangs in prison to protect the white people. And then, of course, there came the other ethnic groups, one after the other. I don't know what other ethnic groups. I am sure there's Muslim gangs in prisons, etc. And they all are cohesive to protect themselves because they know that in numbers there is strength. It's an old adage. So I'm not making a broader statement about that. I'm saying it's like when you are forced to, ethnic groups reemerge is what I'm saying. And they're more easily identified through race than through ethnicity, incidentally, because you can certainly be a member of a white power gang without being a member of an ethnic group. They don't know whether you're Irish or English or Scottish or Italian. I wouldn't think. I don't know if they care about those things. So it's a joining together based upon skin color or race, if you want to put it that way. I'm not here to judge it whether it's good or bad. I'm talking about the disappearing cultures in America and the birth of the Savage Nation. I created this show. I have to tell you again so you finally get the picture of how this happened. It was through absolute dire desperation and necessity. Not that I was broke. I didn't need the money. I'm doing better than I ever would have done any other way. Well, unless I had invested in Harlem real estate in the 60s when I was told to do so. Or unless I had bought real estate in Jerusalem when I was there in 1979, which I refused to do because I was one of the fools who refused to make money off the Holy Land. You know, little things like that. I didn't want to just make a buck off everything I did. I wasn't oriented that way. I'm not thinking that way. I'm not one of those people like you see on Billionaire. But thank God I did okay anyway by following my own particular, let us say, path, as it were. So the point is the ethnic groups. So I came from a very cohesive, non-religious community, but everybody knew everybody. And very much like in that PBS documentary that I saw last night about the Irish Catskills, there was a Jewish Catskills that we all know about from the Borscht Belt comedians. That's so well known. And I heard about, and I was jealous of, the Italian Alps and the Poconos. I really wanted to go there because I knew the food was better. There's no question about it. And as I learned years later from my friend Lorenzo, who passed away a number of years ago, he said to me, we Italians are like the Jews. He says, we're just happy Jews. That's the only difference between us and you. He's the same a corporation, different, what do you say? Same a corporation, different division. He was a great guy. I miss him. Great guy. Disappeared from the earth. You know, some people, they're bigger than life. He was one of them. I don't go in there anymore, especially after the incident with the bongo drum prosciutto. I mean, if he had been there, they did that to me, probably would have cut their hands off with a cleaver. Anyway, if he's up in heaven, I hope he got a good laugh out of that one. The bongo skin orange prosciutto. It's true, with a congressman at my table, no less. Can you believe that they would serve me that? Just for you, Mike. Special from the toilet bowl. I mean, I heard of sewer shrimp, but I never heard of sewer prosciutto. Anyway, let's put that aside. So we're talking about ethnic groups, you know. So we said they're not thriving, really, except in prisons. Then you in America, you see them in ghettos where immigrants come in. They all stick together. And same as your grandfather, or great-grandfather, probably. Little enclaves in a local in language, and they Berlin, they all talk the same, this and that. And then what's going to happen is in a generation or two, you would hope they would assimilate, wouldn't you? And it's been true for every ethnic group, and it will not be true for one, because they never assimilate. Take a look at Europe. They remain ghettoized, and they want to destroy everything around them and convert them to them. Sorry about that. It's just the way of the world. my little observation. And they say, well, who says your observation is more accurate than anyone's? I didn't. I said, it's my observation. Now, it does help that I have a couple of degrees, higher degrees, and I'm not going to hide it just because everyone else in radio has no higher degrees. What do you want to do, hide it and make believe I'm Ed Norton, the plumber? Hey, Mike, tell us about the plunger, huh? Don't give us that highfalutin PhD stuff. Talk about the plunger, Mike. That's what we want to hear. No, I have a master's degree in anthropology, a master's degree in ethnobotany, and a PhD in ethnonutrition. And epidemiology, so I'm very proud of that because I killed myself to get these higher degrees because from my culture, education was considered godlike. The closest thing in my culture to being important was education. It was the number one thing. It was drilled into my head from the time I was a child. You know, and I'm thinking about it more and more as I get older. It's coming back to me. A lot of the things, how they trained the children to succeed in this world. I'm thinking about their techniques. It was all third person. When the boys were young, and I mean really young, I guess everyone did that to the kids. They'd start with the things like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't think it was limited to the ethnic community I came from, but do they still ask a child, what do you want to be when you grow up? I think that's considered some kind of ist, isn't it? What's it's making a child uncomfortable, giving them an anxiety attack, implying that being grown up is different than being a child? Well, they used to ask us, what do you want to be when you grow up? For the time I could remember thinking, they would ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And then the men would look at the boys, and not in any put-down way, they'd start talking about what he would be good at, he would be good at, he would be good at. Would you believe it? They'd say, well, I think he'd be a good this, I think he'd be a good that, I think he'd be a good that. That's what they did. They were, in other words, selecting the boys for their qualities, whether it be, I don't know what they were. Who knows? One would be a good lawyer. One would be a good doctor. One would be a good chiropractor. One would be a good podiatrist. One would be a good nail, whatever. One would be a good crook. The other guy would be a really good crook and become a politician. And if he was really a great crook, he'd become a hedge fund operator. I'm joking. Come on. But anyway, so the thing is that they would subtly condition children to thinking about what they'd be when they grow up. And then they put pressure on you. Not only that, but there was pressure to get married young and have children. And any young man who was not married by a certain age was considered, let us say, let's put it to you this way, not normal. There was great pressure in the community. What's the matter? You haven't met the right girl yet? What's the matter with you? Something wrong with you? I mean, they would do this to you constantly, day in and day out. So you say, oh, they shouldn't have done it. It made boys uncomfortable. Yes, but it also created families, and it also created children, which is the way of the world. This is how ethnic groups survive. Now, it's done in Chinese communities. You've heard about the tiger mother, haven't you? Somehow, they're not ashamed to drill into their kids that unless you get straight A's, you're a moron. You get a B, you're a dummy. And they do very well because they have tiger mothers. They're relentless. Now, compare that to the liberal way of bringing up a child. Never make the child uncomfortable. Never pressure the child. Never tell them that they're wrong. If they swing the bat and hit someone in the head with it and flies out of the hand, good job, Johnny. You ever see these games today? It's sad. The kid can't run. Good job, Johnny. What do you mean, good job, Johnny? It's not a good job, Johnny. You're putts. You shouldn't be playing ball. Go home and learn the violin. Put the stupid bat down. What does every moron have to be a ball player for? I don't understand this country. Why is that the stupid norm that every stupid child has to learn to be a ball player? That's all they can do? There's nothing else you can train a child to do and hit a stupid ball? I look at this, I'm sorry, this is just the way I see it. So anyway, where I'm going with this is interesting because I'm not sure I'm going. I'm talking about this whole loss of the ethnic community. And we're talking about all the other stories I mentioned and about dropping loser friends, which is such a good topic. It's the number one road to success that I found. Well, not number one, but it's tied into what I'm saying to you. You hang around with the wrong people, you're going to go to hell. You're going right there, and you're going there in a handbasket on a freight train. You have to drop your loser friends, and they could be nice people. They may not even be bad people, but they could be very, very bad for you. Okay? So there's some of the topics on the Savage Nation. I have such great callers now. I had to get angry at the audience. They call like crazy. The lights went. You weren't calling till Mike got angry. I got the ire up, then suddenly you can't get on the show right now. So I get angry at you again now. If you go to michaelsavage.com, I'm not selling anything, cost you nothing. You go to the first story, says Rothschild Bank pick ends populism, wins France for globalists. He's a banker. But number two is click here to sign the petition urging Trump to intervene in Britain to end the ban. We have now crossed 16,000 people. When I get to 20,000 people, I'm sending it to the president. I want to do that this week. Please sign it. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is your community. I want to tell you about something because Mother's Day is this weekend, and you can still send 100 blooms from Mom Bouquet from Pro Flowers just in time for Mother's Day. You're going to wow her with these bright, colorful flowers. Nobody knows flowers like I do. That's why I chose this sponsor. It comes with a free glass vase for just $19.99 plus shipping and handling. And if you really want to make a statement, you can upgrade to a premium vase and include gourmet chocolates for just $10 more. Now, I can tell you from first experience, these gorgeous bouquets really make an impact with the important ladies in your life. Everyone I've ever sent them to loves me for that day. Choose a delivery date you want, and Pro Flowers are guaranteed to arrive fresh and beautiful. And stay that way for at least 7 days, so you get your money back, period. There's still time to get 100 blooms from Mom delivered by Mother's Day. Click on the mic in the top right. Use my code SAVAGE. You'll get these stunning flowers and free glass vase starting at just $19.99. If you're going to do this, do it from my show. That's proflowers.com, code SAVAGE when you click on the mic. Order today before you're out of time, and Pro Flowers is out of this bouquet. Now let's go to the callers. KSFO, Jeffrey, line two. What's your topic, Jeffrey?
Yes, sir. I am an American. I'm just like you. I feel like my culture is just disappearing around me. I'm an Irish-French-American with German background as well, so I'm very European. And I've kind of been raised to be proud of our culture, not necessarily just white culture, but our culture in general. We talk about our immigration to the country and what we've brought here. And
oh, yeah, you had the white privilege of your grandfather working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. That was the white privilege. Instead of collecting welfare, he went to work 18 hours a day. That was the white privilege that got you where you are today. I'm so sick and tired of this big lie put out by the communist left to put into the mouths of these yappers in colleges about white privilege. There is no white privilege. It's called white hard work and a sense of values and a sense of family. That's what it is. And I'm sick of the big lie, by the way. You want to know where I'm coming from? I am going to counter the big lie about white privilege. There is none. It's a fabrication of the illegitimate communist left in order to make your sons and daughters feel ashamed just for living. And it's time to stand up to these mobs, these communist mobs that are trying to destroy us from within. Yeah, white privilege in my eye. 16, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. Sacrificing, saving money for the children's children instead of blowing it on garbage or on drugs. You know what I'm saying to you? That's the white privilege that they tell you about. They don't want to admit that you got here through the hard work of your ancestors. And the same is true for the Chinese communities and other Asian communities. But you don't hear them talking about Chinese privilege, do you? You take a look at the people admitted to some of the most elite universities in America. Many of them are Asian. Do you hear the communist left say that there's Asian privilege? They wouldn't dare do that because they include anyone of ethnic background to be one of them, which is such a joke unto itself. It's part of this whole manifesto of the left. And I can see right through it all. I'm clairvoyant, and I also can see reality. No, you never hear about Asian privilege, do you? And yet there's so many Asians that do so well in this country. And that's because of hard work. That's because of tiger mothers. That's because of a culture. That's because of the culture drilling into them hard work and a respect for learning. It's not to do to Asian privilege any more than it is to do with white privilege or Jewish privilege or German privilege or Italian privilege or Irish privilege. Be proud of who you are, and don't let these communist losers steal your life from you.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award.
I love this song. Welcome to the show. We were talking about, and still are, the death of ethnic communities in America and how it led to the birth of the Savage Nation, this radio community that I created, which is going on now many years, 20-some-odd years. And the only place ethnic communities are thriving outside of prisons are in, you know, immigrant communities where they're cohesive, et cetera. And many of you probably remember your grandfather, your grandmother, and their ethnic background and how they identified with their culture, whether it had been Jewish or Irish or Italian or German, Polish, Hungarian. They spoke Hungarian in the house, or Romanian or Russian. The grandpa probably still read a Russian newspaper and told you about how beautiful the country was, et cetera, Irish, the whole thing. And how we've come today to this homogenized, lost world where our culture is no longer clearly defined, and yet many of us have come together with our love for America as our new community identity. Our identity cohesed for you in many ways by myself with my message that a nation is defined not by ethnicity, but by its borders, language, and culture, which transcends an ethnic background. So you could be any ethnic background and still love America and identify as an American. And this is a my definition of a nation defined by its borders, language, and culture. It had very much to do with Trump's messaging and his victory. And the further he goes away from his messaging, the further he's going away from his own victory. I can tell you that right now. And unfortunately, to talk about Donald Trump for a minute, he is being influenced by liberal family members who are moving him so far away from that message of borders, language, and culture that it's very hard to maintain any interest in the presidency, and that's happening across America. I don't care what the popular numbers show or the ratings show. It doesn't matter. I know better than the ratings. I know better than what the polls show. I know better. Trust me on that. And so he has to get back to what he ran on. He's got to get back to what he ran on. He's got to do it as quickly as possible, and he's got to stop listening to the liberal advisors within his own community or his own family. What's interesting to me, and I'm going to read it right now, is I'm working on the second edition of Trump's War as I wait for your calls. And by the way, there's no room to get on right now on that topic. And also, have you dropped loser friends to improve your life? Tell us about that. That's a great topic. That'll go for 2 days, and many of you will think about it over the night. Because you cannot thrive in America or anywhere until you drop your loser friends. They may be nice people. They may be fun people. They probably are. Most loser friends are actually a lot of fun, incidentally. But they drag you down. And moreover, they prevent you from moving up. They're jealous of your success, in case you don't know it. They will support anything in your life except your success. If you get drunk, they're going to make you feel great. If you get high, they're going to make you feel great. If you can't get a job, they're going to make you feel great. But if you give up the drugs and alcohol, if you give up unemployment and go out and actually get a job, they're not going to like you as much because you're a threat to them. That's the reality of that one. So in other words, I'm writing the second edition. I'm changing some in the chapter one to see how Trump's actually doing of Trump's war. And I'm not kidding you. This is a great pitch. It's a real one. I would suggest you grab any copy you can of the first printing, of the first edition of Trump's War, because there's going to be a second edition. And in time, the first edition will be worth much more than the second edition. That's my guess. So I want to read you my preface that I wrote December 23rd, 2016, when the publisher said, please write a quick book on Trump. And here's what I started with. Trump's War, it was called America, America. This will be in the second edition. I don't know when that'll be out. Soon, I hope. Look what I begin with. For generations, I wrote, immigrants poured into America
running from oppression or a lack of opportunity. They came by the millions. Most started with little except faith in themselves, faith that hard work and loyalty to the nation would be rewarded, if not for the immigrant himself, then for his children, and for the greatest majority at work. Countless waves of humanity found in America, if not fame or fortune, security and freedom. Some, through bad luck or bad thinking and behavior, found only sadness. But for the greatest number, America was the land of milk and honey promised in the Bible. And then came the great upheavals of the 1960s. The political and sexual, leading millions to ruination, bitterness, despair, all three, and then some. And then I go into the next, which I'm sorry to tell you is really embarrassingly true. With the arrival of a president whose middle name, Hussein, is synonymous with Muslim agitation, there began a spiral into a virulent anti-Americanism on a level never seen before. Blacks were taught to hate all police and to blame the phantoms of race for their anger and misery. Even millionaires of African heritage, especially those in the entertainment, sports, and media theaters, began to hate the nation that made them rich and famous. The colleges and universities and schools during the era of Hussein became cauldrons of hatred towards whites, heterosexuals, Christians, and Jews. It did not matter. Hatred became the rule under Hussein. Tens of millions of immigrants were flooded over the borders without any inspection of their health or affiliations with possible terrorist organizations. The border with Mexico was fundamentally eliminated. The border patrol reduced to eating tacos and providing diapers for the hordes Hussein was hustling over the border. Bizarrely, even once respectable scientists in the governmental agencies tasked with protecting the health of the nation lied for Hussein on a regular schedule, fabricating the resurgence of diseases once eradicated on these shores, even covering up the mass importation of a new virus, Zika. Tuberculosis, cholera, smallpox, and polio, which were once eradicated or almost eradicated, were again plaguing the population because of the immigrants. Waves of Muslims were forced upon a population reeling from one terrorist attack after another. Not Muslims of the preferred class coming to work and add to society, but millions of hate-filled, unvetted, unassimilatable, truly foreign people who threatened to unravel centuries of constructive cohesion. And then the unexpected happened. An underdog billionaire, showman, businessman, was elected president of the United States. Due to a populist uprising, an old party woman, whose entire campaign was based upon division and hatred, whose only appeal was to the marginal groups and vast armies of civil servants, well, she lost. Donald Trump ran a campaign based on only a few principles and promises. Make America great again by building a wall on the border with Mexico, banning the immigration of Muslims, demanding fair trade, restoring the military, bringing back factories and jobs. This book I wrote is about Trump's war, his promises and his challenges, a war against enemies within and without, a war against his own entrenched Republican Party, against a twisted internationalist media. Now listen to this. Against his own liberal background and inclinations. You can't fool the savage any of the time. We cannot say at this time, at the time of this writing, so early in his tenure, what parts of this war will succeed. What we do know with great certainty is this. The military is becoming stronger and pride is slowly being restored. His early appointments of solidly patriotic warrior generals assured us of greater national security. War with Russia has been avoided, thank God. The intelligence services so shamefully compromised by Hussein are in shambles. They must all be cleansed of internationalists, of Muslims with questionable loyalties, and corrupt deadbeats in it only for personal gain. What we need is a new generation of good shepherds. It's one man's opinion. What do you want me to do, tell you what I don't think? If I told you what I didn't think, I'd be like a guy on ABC or CBS or NBC or on Fox News today. No, I tell you what I think. If that's a crime, then forgive me. Okay, so that's the opening to the show. Let's see. My best line of the day is this. Let's see. Was working at Plunger at home before the show. Thought how glad I did not go to Choate and Harvard. Raised by an immigrant father who taught me the basics of plumbing, electrical, how to saw a piece of wood, how to drive a nail, and how to screw a screw. I'm not kidding you either. You know that most kids today cannot screw a light bulb into a socket? They wouldn't know what a light bulb is, let alone pick up a hammer. If you gave your son a hammer and a nail, would he know how to drive a nail? Don't call and say, yes, he does, because you taught him. I'm talking 99.9 don't. They cannot lift the hammer. How about a saw? Would you put a saw on your son's hand? They'd probably report you to the school principal as being abusive. If the kid came in and with a nick on his finger and said, my father gave me a saw, taught me to cut a piece of wood, and I nicked my finger. Child Protective Services would swoop down on you with a black helicopter. Or a plunger? Are you kidding me? You're going to go that low and you become like a plumber in your own house? It works. Plumbers do the job that plumbers do in some cases. They work. Every house should have a plunger and a saw and a hammer and a nail and many other things. How about a screwdriver? You have a screwdriver in the house? Probably not. If you have to put a screw in, you call Pedro. You call an illegal immigrant to put a screw in. Then you give him a whole story about how wonderful he is. Look, I live around this. They're not bad people. It's just that they've lost their own culture. That's all. So what would you like to talk about? A lot of good topics. That's all. I got a minute or two here to tell you. Well, let's see. Today is Monday. I was going to avoid this, but I'm not going to avoid it. I have a colonoscopy on Friday. No big deal. Old ladies get them. People get them now. I had one 10 years ago. This is it. Never again. The last time was bad enough. But this time I'm going for the full knockout drop. I do not want to see the kielbasa going in while doped up. I mean, I don't want to see. I mean, I just don't want to see that. The whole idea of it. It's like you wake up, you know, moaning to yourself, and you don't know if you took an Uber to the wrong part of town when you wake up. I mean, let me leave it at that. I don't want to get too graphic. The last thing you see is a nurse coming at you with a kielbasa. And then you wake up groggy and in semi-pain. It's bad enough, but I mean, I don't want to. Can't they make the probe a little narrower? Must it be the same bore, like the size of a mini salami? Can't they make one that look, I mean, a little small? Why must it look like a kielbasa? I don't understand that part of it with medical technology. Why does it have to be the size of a junior salami? Why can't they make the probe on a colonoscopy device thinner so it's not quite as graphic? I don't get that part of it. Or is that part of the shtick? Whatever. So that's Friday's pleasure. From the tooth, you know, it's from one end of the alimentary canal to the other. And then it's going to be over. I'm not going to talk about disease and dying or medical stuff. I come on. Since Katie Couric did this years ago, it's become a big thing. I do not want to watch it on television. I even said to the doctor on the phone the other day, he said, no one does that anymore. What's this watching the probe inside you on a TV screen? Who cares? Just wake me up and tell me I'm clear. That's all. Or give me the bad news. You know what I mean? Doctor, doctor. You know, that one. We caught it in time or we didn't catch it in time. That's all. By the way, the evidence, the scientific evidence on the colonoscopy is much different than you'd hear on NBC. Of the polyps that the doctors find and snip, a very small percentage of them go on to become tumors, incidentally. Just so you should know, they're kind of a natural growth. They don't all become cancerous. So that you should know. Not all of them become cancers, and you know, your life didn't get sick. So a large percentage of them, are benign. So they don't really have to be clipped. That's A. And, you know, it's like a lot of other procedures that are going to be looked upon in years to come as mistaken. I told you the story 100 times. I'll tell you it again in 1 second or less, 1 minute or less. About the 1890s, in that period of time, the upper class in England, that means the people with money, they weren't higher class, they just had money. You know, the rich are different than you and I, they have money, as was said. The rich in England thought that going to the bathroom was disgusting and animal-like, and they wanted to eliminate it. So it became the fashion to put on colon bags, literally to slice open the lower abdomen, and replace the entire bowel movement with little bags, which is her. I mean, you know, if people have cancer, they do that. No one likes it, but they actually were electing surgery to do that so they wouldn't have to stoop down. I'm not making this up, you know, and go to the bathroom, so to speak. Now, we all know how stupid that was. How many of our current medical practices are as stupid as that? I'll give you a few ideas at another time. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. So what we voted for Trump for, in plain English, was to save, truthfully, America, American culture as we know it, and more particularly European-American cultural identity. I mean, no one says that, but that's what it is. When you have pigs like Dianne Feinstein, one of the wealthiest women in the world, using the rhetoric of the far left against white people as she does in Clip 11, you'll understand what hatred there is for these power elites who continue to attack the American individual. Listen to Clip 11. Listen to this lying individual, Dianne Feinstein.
I don't know what the leader, McConnell, has in mind. I don't know what the 13 white men, when you have five Republican women who are excluded from that.
Are you listening to this? Here is a European-American woman, if you want to call her either of those things, one of the wealthiest women in American history, whose fortunes have greatly increased, and since she's gone into politics, increased not by 10 but by 100, if not more. And yet she's using the rhetoric of the radical left, again using race as a weapon. How could you people vote for your own burial? You know, you liberal Democrats, many of you are so smart in your fields of enterprise. You're brilliant doctors, you're brilliant lawyers, you're brilliant engineers, you're brilliant web designers, you're brilliant business people. But when it comes to politics, you're actually suicidal. But you don't know it. You have no idea that you are actually digging your own cultural grave. And if the world that you want to inherit exists somewhere in the world other than America, will you please tell me where that world is? Because the world that you're creating is not going to look like that world. No, it will not look like Denmark. No, it will not look like Holland. No, it will not look like the Europe that you imagine still exists. It will not look like anything you can imagine. But it will look like what's going on in Africa, where warlords rule. It will look like parts of South America, where people fight over basic foodstuffs. That is what you're getting by voting in the Feinsteins, the Clintons, the Obamas, any of them. They're all leading us to you know where.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Michael Savage back with you, the father of Trump's war. Glad to be with you. So we're talking about the loss of ethnic communities in America, which led to the birth of the Savage Nation. We're talking about, have you dropped loser friends? Did your life improve? Is Obama's criminal former staffer right? Is the Brexit Trump wave of nationalism broken? And according to a new biography, Obama has been exposed as a jive artist to use race as political strategy. And what's amazing about the Obama story is how it still doesn't resonate with the left. They've been conned. The biography proves they've been conned. He got a $70 million book advance. He gets $400,000 speeches on Wall Street, and they still think he's one of them. It shows you that the left is rather naive. They're not as clever as you may think. They're very easily manipulated. All you're going to do is throw a few code words at them, and they'll jump for the bait like hamsters in a cage. Chris on KSFO Line 9, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I'm a Polish-American, third generation. And when I was growing up, my father would not teach us Polish. And one day I asked him, I said, how come we don't know Polish? Because I had a hard time communicating with my grandparents. I love them as but it was, man, I was exhausted trying to understand them.
Right.
And he said, well, we're American. And I just took that, okay, I'm not Polish anymore, I'm American.
Mm.
And so the only...
Do you feel that you're missing something and not identifying with your ancestry?
Yes. I'm a patriot, but my culture is ignored.
So in other words, you're drawn to nationalism in America. You listen to this show. It gives you some sense of identity,
you bet.
More or less. Is that true? Listening to this show gives you some sense of national identity?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
I can't hear. Yeah.
Yes.
Of course. And that's what people are attracted to with this show. I get that from the beginning. But I'm going beyond the national identity politics that I use on the Savage Nation to the actual ethnic identity that's lost in America, mainly amongst European-American descendants of European-American communities, whether it be Irish or Italian or Jewish or Polish, as you're saying. So have you picked up on your Polish heritage in any way?
Just by keeping the cooking traditions. And my sister has done the family tree, and we've traced our...
Right. There's no real identity with Polish culture, per se.
No.
Well, okay, all right, I understand that. That's kind of what I'm saying. I don't know that this will ever result in anyone restoring their cultural identity. I don't know how you do that, frankly. But I appreciate your call. Let me send you a copy of Trump's War. That's our national identity, in plain English. So it comes down to. Well, for example, so I saw this show last night on PBS. I was scanning around. It was surprisingly good, called The Irish Catskills. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I was so amazed at how similar it was to my ethnic background, even though we're not Irish. I didn't even know they had their own enclave. But it was the same cultural transition where it started with, you know, who knows, 1900, 1910, the bar owners buying a little farm and converting the barn into a dance hall and this, and it developed into hotels and this and that. It's pretty amazing to see this. The work ethic of the ethnic groups, how hard they work. White privilege might be behind. They work their behinds off 7 days a week. They'd run a business in the city and race to the mountains to run another business. White privilege, my eye. They just worked and worked and worked and worked. That was the privilege. The privilege was to be able to work, and they did so. That was the privilege. And put that into your left-wing pipes and smoke it with your stupid medical marijuana. Don't get me started on this privilege business. So I know what hard work is. I'm still working harder than I should. And the thing is, why do I do it? You know, it's a funny thing. I ask myself every day, when are you going to retire? Why do you do this? The answer is why. I mean, why retire from what? From life? You don't retire from this business any more than you do from certain walks of life that are illegal. You're in this for life. This is not like the NFL. You don't walk off the team. There is nothing out there for you after you've done radio and done it so well. I've had the biggest year of my life. I have to remind you, number one best-selling book, very proud of it, Immigrant Son. Elected to the National Radio Hall of Fame, very proud of it. Very, very proud of that. People don't even know this. Someone's elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They seem to know it in all of the communities of America. You think the Radio Hall of Fame is easy? You think being elected to the Radio Hall of Fame is nothing? You're mistaken about that. It's a big deal. So I've had a lot of victories this year, and you would say, well, go out on a high note. But there's nowhere to go. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? So I come back every day, and I try to create something new and fresh for you. And I usually draw it from life itself rather than from the news. Because the news is, you can read it yourself. Now, I'm thinking about this. You know, you talk about ethnic identity. When Israel was founded, the Jews who founded Israel, of course, were socialists. I don't want to remind you of that. And the reason that they were even elected as a nation by the UN, I think in 47, I don't remember the year, 47, 49, I'm not quite sure the year, was because of a vote by Russia. And do you know why Russia voted to make Israel a nation? Because it was a socialist nation. I don't know if you know the origins of Israel are pure socialism. And the glorified and romanticized kibbutz system, the collective farms, the collective fishing organizations, were pure socialism. That's how Israel was founded. But the point I'm getting at is a little different than the economic system. The language itself, the ancient Jewish language of Hebrew, was long dormant except amongst the religious, in the religious books. And yet, the Jews who founded Israel made a decision that they would speak the language of their ancestors. And so Hebrew became the national language. It's a very interesting story unto itself. And that is the origin of many of the ethnic or, you know, return to the ethnic base movements in the world today. So you would see, for example, the separatists in Quebec. I'm giving you a little example. Were so outraged that they had to speak English in Canada. Some of them became stupid revolutionaries with guns and bombs in order to make Quebec French, French-speaking, you know, Francois. You know. All right, so they could speak their ancestral language, and whatever that means. Or you look at Mexico. Why did the Mexicans speak Spanish? Why do the El Salvadorans and Guatemalans and Nicaraguans speak Spanish? Because they were conquered by the Spaniards. That's not their native language. Now, this was well described in one of the great movies of all time, done by Mel Gibson, called Apocalypto, which he did in the Mayan language. It was one of the bravest films I've ever seen in my life. He was never given credit for it because of the racism in Hollywood towards him. The hatred and racism is overwhelming. And the stupidity, by the way, the low-life stupidity of Hollywood never seems to be lower than it is on a daily basis. But Apocalypto broke new ground, and he did the movie in the Mayan language, if you ever saw the movie, about how the peaceful Mayans were living a peaceful life in their, you know, regions of Central America, wherever they were living. And they were conquered by a more militant tribal people. I think it was the Aztecs that did it. They came in and turned them into slaves, killed them, cut their hearts out, rolled them down pyramids. So it was just showing you, you know, a little touch of the reality of the history at that time. But the ethnic languages of Mexico were not Spanish. There were various Indian languages, either Mayan dialects or Aztec dialects or others. And I'm surprised there's not more of an ethnic movement in Mexico towards the native languages, the indigenous native languages, rather than English. It's a very Spanish, excuse me. It's a very interesting question to me of why there isn't a greater movement towards ethnic identity. Because Spanish is certainly not the language of Mexico originally. It's certainly not the language. It was conquered, the language of conquest. So you ask yourself, what does this all mean? Now, there's no specific point to all of this. I'm not trying to sell you anything or bring you anywhere. I'm just talking about the loss of ethnic identity in America. In my case, it could have led to the end of me. When I left New York, I don't even remember when I left. I don't remember. I don't even know the year I left. I think I do. 1969 or something like that. 68, I think, around then. I left New York to take a one-year fellowship in Hawaii. I had a choice between Cornell for a year or Hawaii. And I remember I was selected both. I was a high school teacher, and I applied for a National Science Foundation one-year fellowship to get a master's degree. And I had a choice of a couple of schools. It's a great story unto itself. The long and short of it is I chose Hawaii. The application had actually been accepted, and I didn't know it. And you're not going to believe this story. I should put it in a biography one day. I was ready to go to Cornell. My whole life would have been different. For that 1 year, get a master's degree, come back and teach high school somewhere. My dream was to teach in the Adirondacks Mountains, collect rocks, and slowly commit suicide on the back porch from boredom. I mean, that's what would have happened. And I'm not knocking teaching. It's a great profession, but it can be quite stifling. So anyway, I remember out of the blue, we called the professor in Hawaii and asked if they had ever received the application. And he said, why, of course we did, young man. In fact, you were accepted. We sent you the acceptance 3 weeks ago. I said, what? My whole life changed because of that. And you talk about fate. Oh, don't get me started on fate. Fate has a huge role in our lives. So anyway, I go there and I, you know, built my whole life there. I had my first child. We had our first child there. I got my first two graduate degrees there. I did my original research there. I wrote my first books there. And then I came to California in 1974 because of the racism in Hawaii towards white kids. And I didn't have the money to send them to an elite school that, for example, that Obama went to. You know, the oppressed Obama went to Punahou High School, which at the time was very expensive. We couldn't afford it. And I did not want to subject my son to the racism of the locals who really picked on white kids, called them howley, picked on them. You have no idea what racism is until you've lived in Hawaii. Never mind the tourist brochures. It is a very, very racist place towards white people. Sorry, that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, reality sometimes is like chalk on a blackboard. You know, you don't want to hear it, and it really bothers you. I left. So I moved to Northern California primarily because I thought of my son. And I would tell you something about having children. It is the greatest motivator on the planet. Without children, a person is not truly motivated in the correct manner. I'm sorry, I don't care how much money you make, you're just not fulfilled. Because you have to live for some other life other than yourself. You have to. It seems to be inherent in the human condition. And by the way, it makes you a happier person to live for a child. Many of us live through our pets. Well, that's a sad secondary choice. I understand that. It's better than living for yourself only. It's nice to take care of a dog. I mean, I've been taking care of Teddy for a while now, and he had that little thing, so I had to take care of him with the medicine on Saturday and this and that. All right, I get it. So it takes you out of yourself. But the point is that living through children is one thing, but living for children is another. I'll be right back to talk more about this on The Savage Nation.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Dr. Michael Savage back with you. My mother always used to say, you are what you eat, and boy, was she right. But who knows what's healthy anymore? Well, I do. Drink Super Beets. What is Super Beets? It is a circulation superfood. Just a single glass a day helps give you the cardiovascular power of this amazing vegetable. Now, why is this important to you? It's all about healthy blood flow. You see, if you're over 40, your body may be losing its efficiency, surrounding energy, stamina, even maintaining healthy blood pressure. Drinking good-for-you superfoods like this helps feed your body's cardiovascular system and your circulatory system and boosts your stamina and energy at the core level. Professional and college athletes trust Super Beets to help them be their best, and you should too. So do something good for yourself today. Go to SavageLovesBeets.com and try Super Beets for yourself. Right now you can get an additional 30-day supply of Super Beets for no additional cost with your first order, plus free shipping. So go to SavageLovesBeats.com today or call 800-481-0504. That's 800-481-0504. Lisa on WABC, boy, do you have a great point. Fire away. Go ahead, please.
Okay, first of all, Dr. Savage, I just want to tell you that I'm a victim of feminism. I have no children. I bought the Kool-Aid about a career, and I was abused by my female bosses. But you are so right that if you don't have children, you have no vested interest. And did you know that I read an article, Angela Merkel, Macron, Rutte, I guess he's the one who's head of Belgium, none of these people have children. So
no, of course they don't have children.
Today.
Not only do they not have children, let's go a step further and leave it right there.
What's the step?
Oh. Well, I'll let you figure it out.
The step further.
Oh, you know, think amongst yourselves.
Be put under surveillance.
They're the ones leading Europe to its suicide because they are suicidal.
Communists. But in addition to that, she grew up in East Germany. Her parents were communists.
Merkel is a communist.
Right.
There are pictures of her in an early communist military uniform. She's a diehard, stone-hearted communist monster who's destroying her own nation. And the Germans voted her in again, just as the French committed suicide. So what am I supposed to do about it? We elected Trump here. What are we getting for it? Are we winning or are we losing?
Well, it's not promising. Look at them. Oh, look at the army. Look at what just happened.
You look at what just happened. A certified war hero, two tours of duty, flight surgeon, West Point graduate is picked by Trump to be Army Secretary, and the so-called LGBT and Muslim pressure groups shaft him along with Lindsey Graham and John McCain, saying he's not fit to serve. Are they insane? So I don't think that the culture has changed in the military. I think the military is still on a road to perdition, by the way. Yes, they got tons of money for weapon systems, but that pays the contractors. I don't think that the climate, the cultural climate in the military is any better. Do you?
No, I don't. And I feel sorry for our soldiers who put their lives on the line. Look at these boys that were just killed, these honorable.
I understand, but your main point is about the death of European culture, and that's because you're saying these European leaders have no children. They don't care about the future. They feel that when they die, Europe will die with them. Okay, Lisa, you're getting a copy of Trump's War. It's the best I could do. I took my millions of years of evolution, my 30 years of higher education, and I condensed it into my book and my books and my radio show. And I hope it's good enough for all of you. I'll be here for another hour. Be here or be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Come Tuesday. Yeah, here come Tuesday. I don't mind Tuesday. I don't even mind a Wednesday. I don't even mind a Thursday, but I'm really not looking forward to the kielbasa on a Friday. Welcome to the show. Just got an article from the BBC, came out minutes ago. Italy migrant crisis. Charities colluding with smugglers. No kidding. Oh, I'm shocked that the church groups are colluding with the gangsters. An Italian prosecutor says he has evidence some of the charities saving migrants in the Mediterranean Sea are colluding with people smugglers. Really? You mean that there are people in refugee agencies who are gangsters? No. They're all good liberals. They're all good liberals. They're humanists. Oh, kidding me. You mean Catholic Charities here in America is doing it for altruistic purposes or Lutheran Family Services? They're not religious organizations. They're wholly owned subsidiaries of big religion. That's all. Just like a certain civil rights activist here in America created a sub-corporation called the Something Action Network, where you can rake in the money and not pay any taxes. It's the way it works. That's all. All right, so that's hour number three. Goodbye now. No, I'm not ready to go by. We're talking about the loss of ethnic communities in America leading to the birth of Savage Nation. The Irish Catskills documentary triggered this. I was very nostalgic watching it last night. I never watched PBS, but I was waiting for two shows I like very much on Showtime. One is called Billions, which has got better and better and better toward the end. Astoundingly well written. I can't believe it. And the other one that precedes it is called Guerrilla. Not G-O-R, but G-U-E-R-R, Guerrilla, about the rise of black radicals in England in the 60s or 70s. It's so well done, it's stunning. And you can say, well, sympathy for the devil, it really isn't. It's pretty ugly because it shows the exploitation of, in this case, the Black Liberation Movement people by the German Marxists in the Biedermannhof gang, who used them basically as tools. The same way that Obama used the liberals as tools, the same way Macaroni used the left as tools in France. It's the way it works. Bernie Sanders, the liar, using the big lie of the wonders of socialism to push his seltzer agenda. It's nonsense. You just got to look at South America and look at what's going on in Argentina. To know how horrible, I mean Venezuela, so I always mix those countries up. Venezuela was once a thriving middle-class society until socialism came along and destroyed the country. Well, we're on the same road. Now, you may think that Trump is going to stop the slide. I'm not so sure. I hope so. Things are looking good in some regard. The job numbers are awesome. They're off the charts. You know that. I mean, the unemployment's down. Jobs are up. That's great stuff. Is Trump getting credit for that? The optimism is back. I hope he does get credit for it from those in the fake news business who put out the big lie every day, you know? Anyway, the phone number here is on that topic. And the other topics are, have you dropped loser friends and did your life improve by doing so? And there's another one that no one called on. Is Obama's criminal former staffer right when he says the Brexit-Trump wave of nationalism has been broken by Macaroni? I'm not so sure that's true. But I do. I have to say this in all honesty, and I know it's not a smart thing to say. If you had known that Trump's administration would be run by so many liberals, would you have voted for him? Absolutely not. Which means that he's not going to be reelected. If he keeps this up, and if he does not heed the warnings of his most ardent supporter and a man who considers himself his friend, me, Michael Savage, if he does not break away from the family liberalism and lets them rule this roost, he's finished. Not only will he not be a, he'll not be not only a two-termer, if he keeps this up, I said this to somebody in the media over the weekend, what, by what I'm seeing, these inner deals, it's getting me sick, frankly. The China deals, the trading on the real estate, it makes my flesh crawl. If Obama had done anything like that, you'd be screaming. It's nauseating. Obama biographer says the vessel was hollow to the core. Maybe that's what you get with any politician. I don't know. I just don't know what you get anymore with politicians at all. But when I see articles over the weekend like family of Trump's son-in-law solicits Chinese investment, I saw blood in my eyes. I said if Obama had ever done anything like this, he would have been impeached. The screaming wouldn't have stopped for 1 second from the right wing. Not 1 second. And then today, Jared Kushner apologizes for what the sister did or something. I don't know. I can't even follow it. The insider deals are getting me nauseous, to be honest with you. It's not right. It's all not right. It's not good. It's not good. It's just not good. You don't make America great again with insider trading. It's as simple as that. That's called crony capitalism and nepotism. And let me tell you something else about nepotism. I've studied the Napoleons, the one, the Napoleon II, and the Napoleon III. The Napoleon III was brought down through nepotism. I don't know if you know that. It is a very big danger for this administration. This is constructive criticism, period, end of story. And I'll tell you something else, since I'm telling you something else. I'll tell you something else. Since I'll tell you something else, I'll give you the straighter talker. Maxine Waters, as crazy as she is, as a lunatic as she is, they are feeding this woman red meat. They are feeding Maxine Waters red meat with this insider trading, and they have to stop it. Period. End of story. Because I want America great again, and I want Trump to be a second-term president again. How do you like that? That's it. Nothing more I could say. You know, I told you in the last hour, I love the hour three of the show. Somehow I get more relaxed. I think the food comes at 1:30, quarter to two. I'm famished. I have to order two Japanese lunches to get a single meal out of it. They're so cheap, it's frightening. This guy, you can't even get a second piece of bad fish out of him. You have to order a whole second lunch, and I throw half of it out. But all right, the dog liked the broccoli and the carrots and the rice. I tricked him. First he got the chicken, then he loves broccoli and carrots and rice. He needs it. And he's losing weight, the old guy, 12 years old. Ugh, the way of all flesh. We see ourselves with 4 feet. Anyway, so getting back to this, hour three I love. I feel relaxed because I know already that the struggle is over. It's like the hell of, you know, launching a radio show, the first 15 minutes, you know what it is? Like launching a rocket to Mars. The boost, what you need in that first launch to get it off the ground is awesome. By the second hour already, you're in orbit if you're good. Third hour already, you don't even have to work that hard. But I'm working hard. Because it's still rolling. Which is the best caller? Which is, of all the three, what should I take? The Irish, the Catskills, Tom on WABC, what's this thing you have to say about the Irish? What's this story? It's interesting.
Yes, it was about, you were speaking about the up in the Catskills, but there was one place in New York City that was much more Irish than the Catskills, and that was Rockaway Beach. It was called the Irish Riviera. And there they used to have one dance hall after the next with the Irish music, the real Irish music playing. As soon as one band stopped in one place, the crowd outside would move down to the next dance hall.
I love it. I heard that last night in the Catskills. When one band would stop in one hotel, they'd run across the street to the other, then back and forth. I would love to be in a thing like that.
And that's exactly the way Rockaway Beach was. Robert Moses came around, and he tore the whole place down, and that's when they moved up to the Catskills.
Well, what do you mean? He tore down the Rockaway Amusement Park, or what did he do?
He tore down the bungalows and the dance halls that were associated with Rockaway. All of
places,
and he made use for them. He built high-rises there. was the end.
Well, all right, well, you could say that happens in every ethnic community. Things change. I mean, the old tenements got knocked down and the high rises were put in. And that was the end of the little deli. That was the end of the little grocery. That was the end of the newspaper, you know, the ethnic newspaper. But my bigger point is that the ethnic groups, from mainly from the European-American backgrounds that I'm talking about, they've not disappeared, but they've become nationalistic, joining in their love for America. They're extremely patriotic groups. That is a fact of reality.
And as a matter of fact, when the Irish were there, especially on the weekends, as soon as they left, they were Americans again. As soon as they...
Oh. Oh, they became Irish down there, but they went back to being Americans when they went home. But wouldn't you say that patriotism runs very high in the Irish American community?
It definitely does. If you look at the records of the Civil War, they weren't even Americans yet. They fought in the great battles of the Civil War, both North and South, and so they
died in such great numbers it could break your heart. How many young boys died for nothing?
And then you
look at that World War II.
Mm-hmm.
The most, by the way, in World War II, you look at the Medals of Honor. This is very interesting. You know, the highest, ethnically, the highest number of Medals of Honor are given to which group? Do you know which group that is?
No, I don't.
It is the Mexicans.
Huh. That's interesting.
They are ferocious warriors and extremely patriotic in the military. People should know that, by the way. It's actually cause for some degree of love for this. Because not all ethnic groups come here to rip the system off. Unfortunately, some do. But the thing is that there's tremendous patriotism for this country. As I wrote in the preface to the second edition to Trump's War, and I do have to say it again and again and again because it takes a while to repeat things until people hear it. Most ethnic groups come here and they find paradise, incidentally, compared to what they left behind. Am I right about that?
100% right. And that's why I can't understand anybody complaining about this country in such a way where they're anti-American, when this country has given so much to them.
Yeah, well, it's the communist left, mainly the professors and those in the fake news business, who feed this lie about white privilege, who feed the lie about America being a racist nation, who feed the lie about America being an exploitive nation. You know, I feel like going back to the 60s messaging, it was real simple. You know what it said? Love it or leave it. You don't like it? Get out of my country.
But when you
then they would say, okay, change it or lose it. I'm not changing it. Get out of my country if you don't like it. That's how I feel about it. I'm so sick of this. America, love it or leave it. I'm just sick of it. I don't want to hear any more from these commie professors on tenure. I've had enough of them. Okay, I think we made our point. I'm sending you a great Irish-American book. It's called Trump's War. Stay on the line. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Look, my friends, this is not easy for me to tell you, but this just came out. It's breaking news, and it's really embarrassing. Trump website yanks dated Muslim ban statement. You happy about that? President Donald Trump's campaign website swiftly yanked his 2015 Muslim ban statement after a reporter asked about it at Monday's Daily Briefing. ABC News fake news reporter Vega grilled White House spokesmouth Sean Spicer on why Trump's 2015 call for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States is still on the campaign site if the admin is no longer referring to it as a Muslim ban. So here we go now. What we were promised, the wall. I'll read it right from the book. I'm sorry. I'm working on the second edition. I've asked the question. Trump's war. The wall. Are we going to get the wall? Taxes. Are we getting a reduction? Well, we already got a little one with... Well, I don't know if we're going to get a little one at all, a reduction, because they passed it in the House, right, on Obamacare, but we don't know what the Senate's are going to do. Tariffs? Are you kidding me? Tariffs on Chinese goods with the deals being done back and forth, let us say, on the inside job? Deportations? Are they up or down? Obamacare? Well, you could say it's repealed, but how far has it been repealed? What about our guns? Seems that they're safe, okay. for now. Military strength. Well, there's more money for weapons and systems, but is the culture of the military strength stronger when you have CAIR, that questionable Council on Islamic American Relations, shooting down a war hero to be Army Secretary? What about schools and bathrooms? What has he done for that? What about abortion and religion? Do you know that people are saying his whole Religious Freedom Act of the other day was a head fake? I don't know if you know this, but many religious organizations are very unhappy with that. Okay, my friends, that's the story so far. Benjamin on KBET in Las Vegas. Fire away. What's on your mind, Benjamin?
I would definitely vote for Trump again just because of the alternatives.
All right, so what would the alternative be right now if she had won?
Well, he's already appointed one Supreme Court justice. That's almost...
I understand, and I have a fear that Gorsuch is going to be as liberal as Roberts is.
Could be. You're projecting. He's going to...
Well, I am. I'm projecting out of reality, but I'll tell you this, that's better than what we know it would have been had she been president.
Right. That's...
She would have picked some goon from Harvard who guaranteed would have been make the Communist Manifesto look like a right-wing manuscript.
That's my point, and he's going to have another one probably. I mean, Ginsburg looks like she's 180.
Oh, what, you know, why do people like that? How do they hang on? And with all due respects to her struggling with cancer, how does she hang in like that?
I don't know. Big mistake that she made by not retiring.
Do you know that she was the chief counsel for the ACLU, and she was put into the Supreme Court by Republicans? Do you know that?
Yes.
So people think that the RINO sold them out yesterday. It happened a long time ago, Benjamin. But you make a good point. You'd vote for Trump again, even knowing about the family's insider trading, which is because... Does it embarrass you at all to read about the insider deals, China, and all of that?
Yes. It's bad, but I'm...
Yes, you're right. It's bad, yeah. But it's better than what we would have had. I agree with you 100%, but it's got to stop. And I'll tell you why. It not only does it look bad, here's what I worry about. Maxine Waters, as vile as she is picking up steam and a lot of money. And every time we see another insider deal by one of the Trump family members, it gives them more ammunition to go after the president. That's what worries me more than anything. It's not so much the greed that they can't control. It's like a disease. It's not just the greedy disease of money. It's that it's liable to bring down the whole administration. That's what really worries me. As I point out in Trump's war, the true battle for America. And nothing has been expunged from it, by the way. I haven't taken anything out of the book. In fact, I'm going to put back everything that Trump's taken out of his website. It's going back into the second edition. So you know what you voted for. You understand how important that is? I do. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Whatever happened to German America? And where's the American Jewish community? Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm talking about the disappearing ethnic communities and stuff like that. And if you care to join the conversation, the phone number is 855-472-8282 on the Savage Nation. Let's begin on line one in Paul on KSFO. Go ahead, Paul. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Well, I confirm what you said about Hawaii. I came from Belgium in 1974. My parents emigrated from Poland in the 1920s, escaping the pogroms of Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And they moved to Belgium because at that time they couldn't move to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, as I mentioned, I lived in Hawaii and I had three kids with me. And they were in elementary school.
Wait, you said you moved to Hawaii?
Yes. In 1998. I moved because of my profession, hotel industry. And I couldn't afford Punahou, like you mentioned. That was exorbitant expenses.
Yeah, no, that's only for poor men like Obama. Poor, oppressed guys like Obama could afford it.
Absolutely. And I will remember all my life here. I'm watching them at a T-ball game on the field, and they were like number 12 and 13 waiting for their turn to hit the ball. And they were kids, you know, they love to hit the ball. Well, as they arrived at number 12, they went back to number 1 without letting my kids hitting the ball. And the next day I went to the principal and said, why, what's going on there? And the principal said, I'm almost verbatim, well, all the kids have been denied of playing kiddie ball, you know, t-ball, while you guys, you can always go back to the mainland and play as much as you want to.
And in other words, overt racism in Hawaii. You're confirming what I know to be true. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
But that's, absolutely. They're naked about it. They're proud. They're proud about their racism towards whites.
Absolutely. I have a question for you, Doctor. Here, I'm looking now at a totally different thing. We're looking at a potential war with North Korea. I lived the 1950s Korean War, basically, where a lot of our kids died for basically no reason. And I remember quite well the Panmunjom Treaty and so on and so on. My question is, South Korea is one of the wealthiest places in the world. There's, you know, a company like Samsung, Kia, and on and on and on, who are making billions of dollars. Why don't they build their army, their armaments, their eventual rockets? I mean, look at a country like Israel. They're surrounded by...
Well, you're right. Now, Trump said he would make NATO, for example, pay more. I don't know that it's happening. The minute he said it, they attacked him. Now, you raise a good point, but you ask any American military person, they will tell you the ROK troops, that is the South Koreans, are amongst the toughest, best-trained troops in the world. I think you know that. What you're saying is they should develop the hardware to defend themselves against the hardware of Kim Jong, mentally insane Un.
Absolutely. When you look at Israel, there are a bunch of insane people around them, like even right now, I mean, you know. They had Saddam Hussein launching Scud missile against Tel Aviv and so forth. And they defended themselves. There was not one American soldier or NATO soldier.
Well, but they didn't. Let's be clear, though. They used American technology to knock down the rockets, though, to a certain extent.
Because America has always been a great friend of Israel. And that's,
I'm not knocking it. I'm saying that it was American technology that was put there to defend Israel against the rocket attacks to a certain extent. But you make a very good point. The jealousy of the Arab communities around the Jews is a well-known fact. It was based upon the fact that for thousands of years, when the Arabs occupied the Palestinian territories of that area, they did nothing with it. It was nothing. It was a desert. The Jews came along and through horribly hard work, back-breaking work in the sun, they turned it into a flowering Garden of Eden, and the Arabs never forgave them because they made them look lazy compared to them.
Absolutely. And you look at today...
You know, I'm giving the naked truth here. It's not easy to do because you got to, like, look over your shoulder everything you say. But that's a fact of reality. Never mind what the left wing says about the Jews stealing this, the Jews stealing that. It was wasteland till the Jews got there.
Nazi formula, you know? That's what Hitler was saying. That the Jews are holding all the banks in Germany. The Jews are holding all the money. They all have diamonds. They all have this. And
well, that's how it worked then. It's working again now. In Europe and in America, the left is again up to their old tricks because they have a new powerful ally, and that's called Islamism. So the combination of Islamism with Marxism is like a pistol and bullets. It is very, very dangerous for the world right now, as we saw with Obama, one of the greatest phonies in the history of the world, a $70 million book deal, $400,000 speeches to Wall Street, and the media doesn't report how corrupt this man actually is. He is absolutely the most corrupt president in American history. All right, my friend, Trump's war goes out to you. Thanks for your struggle. Next caller, 855-407-282. 855-400-SAVAGE. WBOB in Jacksonville, Norman, line 5. If you're still there, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Wow, you get online and you freeze. Talking about your changing your friends and your way of life.
All right. One of my questions was, have you dropped loser friends? Did your life improve? What did you do?
Yes, it did.
Well, what did you drop? What kind of friends did you drop?
And it helped.
Okay, so you dropped druggy and alky friends?
Yes, I did. I had to delete their numbers, and then when they called, I had to tell them to quit calling.
And as a result, you were able to climb back up on your own, right?
On my own, no help.
Well, God bless you. It's not easy. And by the way, losing those friends is very hard because they are the backbone of your life at a certain point. You start to think that they're more important than they are, and you can't live without them. But you know what? Walking alone is better than walking with vampires. That's all I can say, who suck your blood from you, as you've come to understand. Norman, thank you. I'm sending you a copy of the book. Stay on the line. That's the absolute reality of it. Well, here's another story. America's Chinatowns are disappearing. Would you believe that? And that's another story. The disappearing American Jewish community. Now, this is an interesting story from the Allgemeiner from October 3rd, 2013, that my superb staff found this morning. And what they said was that this is an amazing story. You got to hear this. It's short. According to the first major survey of Jews in 10 years, 71% of non-Orthodox Jews intermarry. Two-thirds of Jews do not belong to synagogue. One-fourth do not believe in God, and one-third had a Christmas tree in their home. Judaism is in dire straits in America. With numbers like this, if Judaism was a business, the entire management team would be fired. To say it's terrible would be a compliment. It's even worse than that. Rabbis, executives, organizations, the American Jewish establishment is bankrupt and terribly ineffectual. Can one doubt that the liberal American Jewish establishment is partially to blame or is responsible for these numbers? That the universalist viewpoint of liberalism has only brought Jews further and further away from Judaism, our nation, and our people. That is so true. That is so absolutely true. I have met so many Jews along the way who said to me that they don't identify with the religion, but they think Judaism is humanism or universalism, and they've lost everything as a result. Now I read that America's Chinatowns are disappearing. That's pretty interesting. That the percentage of the population that claims Asian heritage in Boston's Chinatown dropped from 70% in 1990 to 46% in 2010. And that's very interesting. That's a very interesting story right there. But it's the same is true for Asian people. In first generation, they congregate in their own neighborhoods where the language of their land is spoken, all the dialects, for example. They read newspapers in various Chinese dialects in their neighborhood. The food is familiar, the grocery stores, the butcher shops. So they feel comfortable there. And then with the next comes a little affluence. And they move to the suburbs, the lily white suburbs. And they go to Chinatown to shop maybe on a Friday. And maybe they take their kids to a Chinese temple once in a while. Maybe the grandparents still speak Chinese in the house. But by and large, that essence of the Chinese culture is lost without losing some very valuable elements of the Chinese culture, which are the work, which is the work ethic, the love of, and the respect for scholarship and learning. These are things that are embedded in the Chinese culture based upon their ancient civilization. And this is something that you can't gain overnight. And you can curse all you want about the success of the Chinese or the Asians, it has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with hard work and their culture. And the faster people learn that, the better off they will be and the more successful they will be. It's that simple, by the way. All right, my friends, let's talk about this topic. Let's talk about the news, all the other topics I brought up today. I love this topic, but I don't know that you want to hear more about it. I mean, I could give you the straight-up news topics that I did today, which are pretty bad. They're not very good. And here are some of them. San Francisco Chronicle, that's a newspaper that never existed except for a short period of time and it died a while ago. But even that paper that died a while ago admits that some anti-Trump protesters are paid by their companies, offering paid time off to its workers for political activity, to agitate, in other words. So that's something you should know about. Again, I'll repeat that Dianne Feinstein, one of the greatest liars and hypocrites in the history of American politics, in my opinion, had the nerve on NBC's Meet the Press to say she's worried what 13 white men will do to health care. Now, can you imagine how shameful this woman is that she would revert to that kind of rhetoric when she herself is A, I would think, of European origin, I'm pretty sure of that, to slam white Republican men? In a racist jibe like that is astounding. I haven't yet gotten to Obama and the biography. Boy, that's a big story. I have the whole article from Larry Gettlin of the New York Post. It's so good about how Obama is being exposed as a jive artist who made a racial decision as part of his political calculus. It's amazing You really have to read that story, which I'll cover at another time. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Let me close out the show by talking about how naive the left is. Many of us think that they're very clever, that they're smart, and they're devious. They're powerful, but they're naive, and they're all manipulated very easily by the power structure, as evidenced by what just happened in France. Here you have a banker from Rothschild. They come up with this guy, never ran before, Macaroni, and they make believe he's a champion of the people, a champion of the left. The man is nothing like that, and yet he stole the election in a huge victory, as much because they were afraid of her as they were in love with him, probably more so afraid of her than in love with him. Of course, the vote was lopsided. The big cities voted for Macaroni, the big city candidate, because it's filled with immigrants and liberals, and the actual French people, the farmers, the fishermen, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, very much like here, very much like in England with Brexit, they voted for Le Pen because they believe in nationalism and they don't want to lose their national identity. So here in America, we had a Macaroni of our own, and his name was Obama, a complete faker put in by the banks. But in his case, he was more Machiavellian than Macaroni. There's a biography that's just coming out that you have to read. And it's talking about in the 80s, Obama dated a half Dutch, half Japanese woman, 2 years his junior, named Sheila Jaeger. And he wanted to marry her. And something went wrong. And here are some of the things you need to read in the book. Garrow notes that before asking Jaeger to move in with him, he asked intense questions of a colleague about, quote, the long-term dynamics of interracial marriage and raising half-black, half-white children. According to Jaeger, Obama proposed in the winter of 1986 during the visit to her parents. But the trip did not go well. Obama wound up in a heated political argument with Jaeger's father, a conservative Republican. Okay? By the end of the visit, Jaeger's father made it clear he did not approve of Obama's marrying his daughter, and marriage talk was put on hold. Throughout 1987, the woman, Jaeger, noticed a change in Obama, watching him become a powerfully ambitious person. By this time, Jaeger said, he had already had his sights on becoming president. This included a belief that he had a calling and a heightened awareness that to pursue it, he had to fully identify as African-American. There was a problem there, Mike Dees recalled. He was concerned if he was going to take the steps to the presidency with a white wife. Barack's political destiny, Garrow writes, meant that he and Sheila could not have a long-term future together. Could not have a future together because of a race. Are you listening to me? No matter how deeply they loved each other. He felt trapped between the woman he loved and the destiny he knew was his. In other words, his ambition, his power madness. So their relationship ended in May of 88 when Jaeger, angry after an argument, read Obama's journal. The book notes that Miss Jaeger was particularly incensed about something he had written about someone else, another woman, and she moved out shortly thereafter. And then there's more and more and more. And he goes to Harvard Law School. No one knows what his grades were because he won't release them. The day he releases, by the way, his grades from Harvard, I'll ask for Trump's tax return on this show. But first, let's see Obama's records at Harvard, by the way. And took a summer job at Sidley and Austin, a Chicago law firm. And listen to this. A young lawyer there, just a year out of Harvard Law, was assigned to be his advisor. Her name was Michelle Robinson. She was another girl from the oppressed background. Michelle Obama came from a terribly oppressed background, Harvard, major league law firm. But again, the left buys the lie that they're inner city black people who suffered so greatly. So again, they use black people to get where they are, and they're still using people to get where they are. $70 million book advance, $400,000 speeches, and he's still held up as a darling of the left. But he married Michelle for one reason, according to this book, and that was because he wanted to be accepted in the African-American community and rise as a politician. And, of course, the rest is history. So what is the point of my reading these snippets from Obama's expose? It's to show you how naive and gullible the left really is. You just feed them the code words, and they salute. They salute, they salute. They do the goose step of the left. I don't know whatever that step is called, but it's not called America. It's not called the America two-step. Just remember that the left is filled with very naive people. Just feed them the code words and watch them jump. This is the Savage Nation. Sign the petition. Buy Trump's war. God bless you.
Savage.